We're continuing in our series in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, and we're going to look at verse 5, this morning. It's a fact of life that people hurt each other. How many of you have ever been hurt by somebody? Put up your hand. How many of you have hurt somebody? Put up your hand. That just is a natural thing. Either intentionally or unintentionally, we hurt each other, and we're going to hurt people, and they're going to hurt you. How you handle that hurt will, to a large degree, determine your happiness in life. If you don't respond correctly to hurt, it will turn into resentment. And if you hold on to a hurt, it becomes resentment. Resentment eats up your energy in such large quantities that eventually you're emotionally empty and you have nothing to give. So our passage this morning, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 5, says this: love keeps no record of wrongs. It does not hold grudges. Now, this word record is an accounting term. For you accountants, you get that. It says it doesn't keep a ledger of wrongs. We're going to look at a man in the Old Testament. So if you have your Bible, I want you to flip over to Job, the very beginning of Job. We're going to look at his life today. Because if there was ever a man who had a reason to be resentful, it was him. He probably was the wealthiest man who ever lived. And in his day, he was definitely the wealthiest man. And one day, he lost it all. He had every reason in the world to be resentful. But instead of getting resentful, he recovered from the resentment. And the Bible says that God made the last part of Job's life even greater than the first. Regardless of the pain that you've had in the past, God can make the rest of your life the best of your life if you'll do just what Job did. So let's look at some causes for resentment this morning. There are a few of them. First of all, what people say about us. Job chapter 12, verse 5 says, "You have no troubles." He's talking to his friends. "Yet you make fun of me. You hit a man who is about to fall." Can words hurt people? Absolutely they can. You've heard me say this before: sticks and stones may break your bones, but names will never hurt me. That's not true. Given 90 seconds, you can recall things that kids said to us on the playground that still hurt. It's amazing how labels stick with us. They still hurt today. In fact, many of us aren't living under the label that God or that Jesus has given to us. We're actually living under the label that other people have given to us. The second one is what people think about us. Job says, "You think you're better than I am and regard my troubles as proof of my guilt." You see, here's one thing I want you to see. Some people think that because there's trouble in your life, it's because there's sin in your life. I got news for you. We all have sin in our life. We are born in sin. But it doesn't necessarily mean, if you look at the life of Job, he did not sin. And yet these guys said, there's something you've done. You're just not telling us. Can you be hurt without having anybody say anything to you? Sure you can. Have you ever felt rejected when nothing was said? Sure. Just by the way people look at you, by their body language, by their nonverbal messages, you can hurt people just by ignoring them when you don't acknowledge that they exist. And you know what? I teach personalities. And there's two types of people. There's type of people that are task-oriented, and there are people that are relational-oriented. I'm a task-oriented person. I have to remind myself that people are my task, to get to know them, to love them, to support them. So many times, without thinking, I can rush right by. In fact, you could be in a mall. If you found me in West Ed Mall, I would probably walk right by you, because I'm on task. I'm on mission. Third one is what people do to us. Look what Job says in Job chapter 19, verse 19. "Those I love most have turned against me." Abuse is on the rise. Physical abuse, emotional abuse, spiritual abuse. We live in a very abusive society. But notice that Job says, "Those I love most." Underline that. The number one place resentment shows up, it's not at work, It's in the house. It's in home. The closer people are to you, the greater chance that they have to hurt you. They can betray you. They can be disloyal. They can say hurtful things and do hurtful things. It's in our homes that we have to deal with resentment the most. What people say, what people think, and what people do about us are what causes resentment in our lives. So what's the problem with resentment? If you read my text this morning, I said, so what's the price that we have to pay? Well, when people hurt us, the normal way to react is to get resentful. And it's normal. It's not the right reaction, but it's normal. In fact, Job says it does three things to us. Look what it says. First of all, it's unreasonable. To worry yourself to death with resentment would be foolish, senseless thing to do. Why? You can't change the past. No matter how resentful you got, it's not going to change the past. Have you ever done something stupid because you've been resentful? Oh, yes. We don't have time for testimonies this morning. I'll show him or I'll show her. And then we go, oh, why did we do that? Psalm 109, verse 33 says, he was so bitter, he spoke without stopping to think. Oh, gosh, that could be on anybody's fridge. Secondly, it's unhelpful. When I'm resentful, it's unhelpful. It's self-inflicting. Job says in chapter 18, verse 4, you are only hurting yourself with your anger. When you get resentful, it always hurts you more than it does the person you're resentful about. That person might be totally oblivious to what's going on in your life. They don't even think about you. There's a great theological show that used to be on TV. It was called The Three Stooges. And the supreme theologian, Curly, is all upset because a guy kept slapping him on the chest. And he couldn't stand it. So he goes to Moe and he says, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to get some dynamite and strap it to my chest. And the next time he slaps me, it'll blow off his hand. That's about how smart it is when you're resentful. While you're stewing and spewing and upset, they're going on with life. Someone has said this, resentment is hell in the heart. Write that down. Resentment is hell in the heart. Friends, the most miserable people that I know are people who are filled with resentment. It's not helpful. And Job would also say, thirdly, it's unhealthy. Job chapter 21, verses 23 to 25 says, some men stay healthy till the day they die. Others have no happiness at all. They live and die with what? Bitter hearts. You can't be resentful and happy at the same time. If you're holding a grudge, if you're holding on a hurt, it's unhealthy. People will say, well, watch what you eat. It's not so much what you eat, but it's what's eating you that makes the bigger difference in your life. On a Saturday, a pastor went to visit a fellow who was paralyzed from the waist down. He lived in a mobile home near the church. He was the bitterest man that the pastor had ever met. He was a rancher, and 6 months earlier, he had been kicked by a cow in the back, and he was paralyzed from the waist down. He was very, very bitter against God, against the doctors who hadn't been able to cure him, the insurance company who hadn't paid him, the church members who hadn't visited him, the cow who had hit him. He was bitter, full of resentment. And the pastor said to him one day, God may want to heal you of this paralysis. I don't know. I don't know what his plan is for your life, but he may want to heal you, but he's not going to heal you first until you get rid of all the bitterness in your life. It's poison. It's worse than cancer, and it's going to eat you alive. And that man bowed his head right there. Tears began to flow down his cheeks. And he said, God, I've got to get rid of this resentment, flush it out of my life, get rid of this bitterness, and fill me with your forgiveness and love. I'm only hurting myself. He prayed that prayer, had a big smile on his face when he was finished. And the next day, he came to church and sat in his wheelchair in the back row. In the end of the service, the pastor said, it may be that some of you here would like to pray for, have us pray for you for something special. If you want, come down and we'll pray for you. The man got up out of his wheelchair, walked to the front of the church, and it was the first time that he had walked in 6 months. You have no idea what you're doing to yourself when you hold on to a hurt or a grudge. It always hurts you more than it does anybody else, and it always ruins a relationship. Proverbs 17:22 says, "A cheerful heart is like good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up your life." If we don't deal with resentment, it will dry us up like a little shell of a person if we let it. For your own sake, for your health's sake, let go and forgive. So, Bob, you might be saying, so what do we do? What's the cure? What's the cure for resentment? I want to look at the three things that Job did. These aren't things that I thought up. These are things that I pulled right out from Job's life that allowed him to turn his life around and made the rest of his life the best of his life in spite of all the tremendous pain that he'd gone through. And if you're not familiar with the story of Job, go back to chapter 1 and read chapter 1 and chapter 2 of the book of Job, or Job, depending on how you read it, and find out what happened to him. It was a disastrous experience. So what do we have to do? The first thing is reveal your hurt. Admit it. Tell the truth. "I can't be quiet," Job said. "I'm angry and bitter. I have to speak," he said in verse 7, or chapter 7, verse 11. Job emotionally vomits. "God, I don't like this. It's not fair. I'm ticked off. I'm angry. This situation stinks." He tells God how angry he is. What did God do? Do you think God was upset because Job decided to just let her go? God knew Job was upset from the moment he got upset. He just wanted Job to admit it and get it off his chest. You see, the start is to reveal your hurt, because revealing your feeling is the beginning of healing. What in your life that you're pretending, what is it in your life that you're pretending not to know? What is it in your marriage that you're pretending is not there, but it is there and it bugs you? Maybe it even hurts. What is it in that relationship with that boyfriend or girlfriend or boss or parents or kids that you're pretending is not there, but it is there? It's like the pink elephant in the living room. What pink elephant? And we're all walking around it. What is in your family that you're pretending isn't true? There are four things that you can do with a feeling, a negative emotion. Is repress it, suppress it, express it. Those are all negative ways to deal with the feeling. Or you can confess it. And we learned about that in the 40 days of prayer. You have to admit it to God. You tell God. Some people say, I'd like to close the door in the past. Yeah, you have to, so that you can move on to the present. It doesn't matter where you have been as much as the direction of your feet today. You can't change the direction that was behind you. But by altering your feet, you can change the direction in front of you. You need to close the door in the past, but there's no closure without first disclosure. You can't close the door. I can't close the door on my past until first I have faced it and I admit it and I share it with somebody. And somebody says, "I'm just going to try to bury my past." But the problem is it keeps resurrecting itself because it's a live burial. If you haven't dealt with it, it keeps popping back up. Any trigger that triggers that memory brings the hurt back. You've got to deal with this first. And some of you need to go home and write a letter to God. And you need to be as explicit and as honest and as expressive as you possibly can be. Just like Job did. Talk about all the things that have hurt you, where things happened, and when things happened, and why things happened. You got to tell God your feelings. He's not going to be blown away. He understands you. Write that sucker out, and then just go and burn it. And then you've done it. First thing you have to do is reveal your hurt. The second thing you need to do is release your offender. Release your offender. Let him go. Forgive him. Forgive her. You're never going to have relief until you do. Job's friends hurt him tremendously. They betrayed him. It's interesting, if you understand the story of Job, these men came and sat beside him for 7 days and said nothing. That was the best thing they ever did. It was when they opened their mouths that they got themselves into trouble. They were disloyal, they criticized him, they misunderstood him. Nothing hurts more than being misunderstood or falsely accused. It wasn't Job's fault at all. He was innocent, but he had every right to be resentful. And God did a turnaround in Job's life. When did he do the turnaround and break him out of the problem into a new life? Not when Job had retaliated, not after Job had got revenge, not after he had been resentful, but after Job had released his offenders. Look at the verse in your notes. After Job prayed for his three friends, the Lord made him prosperous again and gave him twice as much as he had before. Will you circle after? It was after Job had released his offenders. Why is that so important? Because we become what we focus on. I don't want you to miss this. This is an important principle. Well, I'm not going to be resentful. When you say that, what are you focusing on? Resentfulness. Bitterness in your heart does very strange things to your personality. We're not meant to walk around carrying grudges. It takes a toll on your life. It's like a hook. You've got to forgive that person so that you can be released. As you release them, you release yourself. So how often we need to forgive? Matthew chapter 18, what's it say? Peter asked Jesus, how many times should I forgive my brother when he sins against me? Up to seven times, by the way. Tradition was three, so he had doubled it and add one, thought he was in good stead. Jesus answered, not seven times, but 70 times seven times. Here's the key. If you count, it's not forgiveness. Doesn't matter whether it's 70 times 7. I mean, you can do the math. What he's really saying, it's the principle here, is if you're counting, it's not forgiven. You did that. Then I better remember so that when you do it again, I can say you did that. If you're going to do this, you're not being loving. Love keeps no records. That's our verse for today. If you're doing that, you're just destroying your marriage. That's all that you're doing. He says 490 times. Here in your notes, forgiveness must be continual. There's a thing going around Christian circles that makes it seem like forgiveness is just a one-shot deal. I was severely hurt, abused early in my life. I've come to a service, bowed my head, and I've said, I forgive them. Is that all I need to do? I sincerely doubt it. Forgiveness is a process, folks. It starts by releasing them. Every time that memory comes up, you have to forgive them again and again until you know that you released them. And then you don't have to do it anymore. How often? As many times as possible. So how do I know when I fully release them? Oh, here's the deal. When it doesn't hurt anymore. You can understand their hurts. You can pray for their success. You can feel comfortable in their presence. Luke chapter 6, verse 28 says, pray for those who despitefully use you, like Job did. When you finally release them, when you feel like forgiving them, you can usually stop. If you don't feel like forgiving them, then that means you need more work to do. I don't know that I've ever felt like forgiving anybody. But I do it, not because I feel like it, because it's the right thing to do, right? Amen? Clara Barton, the founder of American Red Cross. There was a man who had hurt her deeply early in her life, and years later, she became involved in his life again. And she was speaking about him to another person very kindly, and the person said, "Wasn't that the guy that hurt you?" And Clara said, yes, I distinctly remember forgiving that hurt. It's a choice. You can hold on to the hurt and let it turn to hate, or you can let it go. You reveal the hurt, you release the offender. It's not just when you feel like it, but when you don't feel like it because it's the right thing to do. Well, I'm just not going to let them get off scot-free. Life's not fair. You're right. It isn't fair. But who said life was fair? God didn't certainly say it. Life isn't fair. A lot of evil people get away with a lot of evil things. That's why I have a deep belief in both heaven and hell. If you don't believe in heaven, you've got a real problem. People like Hitler just don't get away with it. They kill several million people and then take their own life. That's it. God's only a God of love, but he's also a God of justice. One day he's going to settle the score. The Bible says we're going to have a call for an accounting. Life's not fair, but one day God is going to make it even. He will settle the score. And my suggestion to you is to do what God says to do. Forgive the person and let God worry about evening it up. So Job says, reveal your hurt, release your offender, and then the third thing is refocus your life. That's how you heal a hidden memory. As long as you focus on somebody you resent, they control you. You're worrying about something they've already forgotten about. And Job did three things in refocusing his life. We don't have time to get into all of these, but I'll look at this verse that's on your screen and in your notes. Put your heart right, reach out to God, then face the world again, firm and courageous. Then all your troubles will fade from your memory like floods that are a past and remembered no more. Job did three things, three steps to inner healing here. Number one, put your heart right. Do the right thing and release the offender we just talked about. Second thing is reach out to God. Invite Jesus to come in and fill you with forgiveness. Why? Because I don't think that you or I can manufacture enough forgiveness in our lives to handle all the hurts that we're going to face. Not only did of those that have happened in the past, but what is going to happen now and even before we die, you'll be hurt many times. I hope you understand that. If you think you're going to get life through life without being hurt, I've got land for you in a swamp that you can buy. See, I don't think you can manufacture enough human forgiveness to handle it. You need God's forgiveness in your life. Think of Corrie ten Boom, the lady who hid Jews in her apartment to protect them from the Nazis. Everybody in her family was killed in a concentration camp except Corrie. She even endured an abuse and all kinds of horrible things. She later went back and met with the guards that abused her and forgave them. Think about that. You can't do that with human forgiveness. You need God's supernatural power in your life in order to let go and to be able to say, it wasn't good, it wasn't fun, it was bad, but I believe that God can even bring out of the bad and somehow the rest of my life is going to be the best of my life. Sounds like Job? And then the third thing he says is face the world again. When you're hurt, we're tempted to withdraw, to put ourselves back into a shell, to put up a wall. I'm never going to let another man get close to me. I'm never going to have any other relationships. I'm never going to let my guard down so that people can see what I'm really like. I exposed myself and they took advantage of it. I was deeply hurt. I'm just going to build up a wall. And when you do that, you're only hurting yourself. Put your heart right. Reach out to God. Then the memory is going to fade and the pain is going to be released. That will happen. Some of you may say, I need to get my memory healed. Then I will face the future. That's not the way it works. He says, do these three things and face the future, and then the memory will heal. How? Well, here's the principle I want you to understand. You cannot resist a feeling. You can only replace it. The more you fight something, the more you embed it in your life. It's the law of life. Whatever you resist, persists. If you do all of these three things, you can be emotionally healed. I believe that. And the happy ending of the story is in Job chapter 42, verse 12. What does it say? God blessed the last part of Job's life even more than he had blessed him the first. I think God brought you here today so that he could say to you through me, you matter and I care about you, and the rest of your life can be the best of your life if you'll let go of these past hurts. So what hurtful memory are you hanging on to? Somebody said something or did something or thought about you, caused you pain. Maybe it happened years ago, but when something triggers your memory, it's painful as just as it was a long time ago this very day. Who have you said about, I'm never going to be like that person? I know so many men who growing up said, I'm not going to be like my dad. And guess what? If you don't release them, you start to resemble them. But I just can't forgive them. That's why you need Jesus Christ. That's why you need him in your life. You can provide, he can provide the power to forgive that nobody else can forgive. Nobody else can give you. He can heal that hurt that no one else can. Open your life to him and do what Job said and reach out to God. Will you pray with me? I'm sure that God's spoken to you very pointedly today, some of you. Would you pray this simple prayer in your mind? Jesus Christ, I want my heart to be right. In faith, I'm reaching out to you. Please take this resentment out of my life. I choose to forgive them. And if someone comes to your mind, forgive those situations. I choose to forgive them right now. Help me to face the world again. Help me to focus on you in the future. Replace my pain with your peace. And Jesus Christ, replace my hurt with your healing.